Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, January 28th, 2015. Good afternoon, Alfred.
Hello, Melody.
Well, just to let you know, and the listeners, Wendy Wilson will not be joining us today. She will be joining me. I guess tomorrow is Thursday when I do my 20 minutes. She'll be joining us tomorrow, and you'll be back on Friday. James Corbett, you will be interviewed. You and James, of course, will be
I will interview James for the second and third segment tomorrow.
Thank you. It's been a long day here at Discount Gold and Silver. It's been a hectic day here at Discount Gold and Silver. We had people taking advantage. You folks don't like it when it's over 1,300, but once we drop below that 1,300, they come right in and scoop it up. So that's a magic number, it seems, for buyers. We have gold down $7 right now at $12.86. Silver is down 5 cents today at $18.08. Platinum is down 9 at $1,254. Palladium is up 12. Go figure, at $796. The USDX today is trading higher at 0.53 at 94.54. Crude oil took a beating today, down almost 2 full points, 1.96 at 44.27. Inventories came out, and of course, you know, there's a stockpile. Their stockpiles are doing fine. So, of course, that took a big hit for oil. Paper markets today were positive most of the day, had a reversal after the Fed came out and did their little, after their statement. The markets kind of did a nosedive, and you have we'll talk about those minutes here in just a little bit, or those statements in just a little bit. The Dow was down 195 points at 17,191. The NASDAQ down 43 at 46.37. The S&P 20 down 27 at 2002. And the 10-year yield, everybody's piling into those bonds. The 10 yield, 1.72%, down 0.10. So I guess with all the changes in monetary policy across the world, I guess people are liking the bonds. And the Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen today came out and said the Federal Reserve said it will remain patient, Al. Our favorite word, the magic word, patient, and they will not rush to boost interest rates. But we all know the writing's on the wall. Is it? Rate hikes are coming sooner rather than later. And the central bank was very upbeat about the U.S. economy, and it cited evidence that the economy is getting stronger. And the Fed dropped their considerable time it has been using to describe when it will start to hike rates. It even hinted that if the economy improves faster than expected, the market should prepare for a rate hike again sooner than currently anticipated. And they hadn't changed interest rates since cutting them to near zero back in December of 2008. And I wonder what the odds are in Vegas, as everyone is so obsessed in trying to figure out and pinpoint when the Fed will finally raise those rates.
What's your guess? If they're willing to hint that they're going to raise them sooner than people anticipated, and they've anticipated in the summer of this year, then it suggests that maybe March, April, but maybe March.
You know, it's so darn hard to tell because they're basing it on a very solid growth in the economy. And, you know, I don't see a solid growth in the economy. Mm. And so if they base it on that, I think they could very well test the markets to see exactly, you know, if the markets will, you know, come apart at the seams. If they raise it a little bit, so that they might, I think it'll be more or less of a test. And you'd have to think that a lot of the market numbers have already figured in a small increase in the rates. So
I don't see that raising the interest rates is going to be that detrimental. In fact, the way I look at it, again, I think they're. When we had an asset-based currency, if they raised the market rates, yeah, the interest rates, I can understand why that might happen. With a fiat-based currency, if they raise interest rates, what it should do is attract foreign currency into this country, increase our money supply. It should contribute to inflation rather than deflation, or at least to some extent. I mean, it's one of these things where if they raise interest rates, there's some evidence that it will contribute to deflation, but there's other evidence, in my opinion, that it will also contribute to inflation. And the question is, which way does it go heavier? Is it more inflation than deflation, or is it more deflation than inflation? What is the net? And I think if they raise interest rates, I think they're going to attract money into this economy from overseas, and when they do, they will increase the money supply, which in theory should cause inflation. So, to me, this is perhaps, PhDs in economics and Nobel Prizes like Paul Krugman, and he says, no, this is going to cause deflation if they raise interest rates. Well, he's probably right, and I'm probably wrong. I'll give you that it certainly has more credentials than I'll ever have. But I'm still looking at it, and I'm thinking interest rate goes up, money comes in.
Well, the problem with raising the interest rates is that this economy will come to a screeching halt.
Well,
there will be no more debt, and for people to spend. I mean, they're not going to be getting homes. They're not going to be going out buying cars. They're not going to be buying all their big ticket items with cash.
Well, they might be. They may the people who want to sell things can sit down and say, no money down. Get a house, no money down. Yeah, you have to pay higher interest, but you don't need the money down in the first place.
They still have, yeah, but they can't afford what they have. We all know their wages.
What does that matter?
We all know their wages haven't gone up.
Talking about subprime borrowers, they can't afford it. They know they can't afford it, but they'll move in.
The overall industry, yeah, but I think there'll be a small, you know, I don't think it'll be a very large, not like what we saw before.
Well, there's another side to this also. What about QE4? Quantitative easing for where the Federal Reserve starts buying more government bonds. Now, they tapered off after 1, 2, and finally QE3, and they tapered off in October and ended that of 2014. But a lot of people are speculating that they are going to restart quantitative easing 4.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they started that, which everybody agrees at least in theory, should contribute to inflation. And so that's what everyone expects it to do. Well, if they were to do that the same time, or roughly the same time that they raised interest rates, is that possible? Likely? Unlikely? Improbable?
I don't know. They're going to do one or the other. They'll either raise rates or introduce quantitative easing. They're not going to do both. They'll do one or the other.
Well, if they perceive raising interest rates to be deflationary and quantitative easing to be inflationary, they could say, well, we're going to do quantitative easing just to balance against the possible.
No, they won't do. They won't do both at the same time. They'll do one or the other. And if if they think that we're in solid growth and they raise rates, but as I said, our economy is not solid. So I find it difficult, hard to believe that they would raise rates. You know, I'm more in the camp that they will have a quantitative four. That's wrong. That's the program
I'm in. You believe that QE4 would come in without raising rates?
Yep.
It's entirely possible.
Yeah,
we hear people speculate about it. We have no clue to that I've been able to hear from the Federal Reserve. They haven't said we're thinking about going back and buying government bonds again.
They wouldn't. And then you have to also look at, you have England that's going to be spending, a trillion plus euros for their stimulus. You don't know how much those trillions might come back and purchase some of our bonds. I mean, you don't know what all that they do. We didn't know that.
Not as long as our interest rate is close to 0%, you wouldn't expect to see much unless they really think Europe is collapsing.
Well, I don't think their bonds are paying that much either.
Well,
so
maybe,
I think their rates are as low as ours. So, and the higher the yields go, the higher the rates, the more they have to pay on their debt. So none of these countries are in position to pay higher rates. So, it's more quantitative easing because the economies around the world don't have solid growth. I mean, even with the drop in oil, you see how it's impacting these corporations. Caterpillar, that was one of their, main excuses why, they dropped so bad was the drop in oil equipment. And you've seen it even with our stronger dollar, the earnings for these corporations, these multinational corporations. The bad stuff will filter down. No, the good stuff ever filters down, but the bad stuff does. And so that means, more job losses and everything else. So, the economies around the world are not in good shape.
No.
So, what are they going to do? I can't see them raising rates. Just can't, which means they probably will, but.
Because tomorrow afternoon. Watch the headlines.
Yes, you go, folks.
Yeah.
Because we live in a world, as I mentioned, prior to the program, we live in a world that it's just like there isn't anything that you can't make sense out of it. Things that all goes against the law of money.
But it's not necessarily against the law of fiat currency. I look at classical math or classical economics as the theories and principles of economics that applied when we had an asset-based currency. When we shift over to a fiat currency, a debt-based currency, this is like going from positive numbers to negative numbers. The formulas don't work the same, in my opinion. I suspect that we have a completely different set of logic, rules, and principles in modern economics because they are based on fiat currencies, which are debt instruments rather than asset instruments, which to my mind is the key to classical economics. I can't prove any of that, what I've just said, but I believe that's, there's a certain amount of logic to it, and almost it's really pretty obvious. It seems obvious when you stop to think about it.
Well, it's obvious to know what the outcome of a fiat currency is. I mean, that's been discussed for years. We know where we're heading. We know where this is all going to end. What you can't figure into the program is all the little spider veins in between and what we're experiencing today. I mean, sure, it's easy to discuss fiat currencies and how it happens and the direction that it goes, what it creates and the monsters that it creates and so forth, free spending and no accountability and so forth and whatnot. We get all that, but it's all these little intricate little veins, as I mentioned, that, you know, sometimes they're just unexplainable because that, to me, that's what the fiat currency is. It's they're surprises,
and you have
reactions instead of actions, you know, because it's the governments that are just reacting to the situations. But the ultimate end of the system is a collapse, is a default. And we know that. It's just getting there that changes and, you know, we try to make sense out of.
Well, you know what they say, getting there is half the fun. In fact, getting there is about 99% of the fun, because when we do get there, it won't be fun at all. You know, it'll be just, it's all fun. Maybe getting there is a yay. I can be a subprime borrower. I can get credit that I'm not entitled to. I can pay off my debt with cheaper dollars. All of this is cause for celebration. That's the fun of getting there. So what the government is trying to do is they're trying to make sure we don't get there. As long as we don't get there, it'll be all fun. But if we do get there, then, somebody's going to have some splaining to do.
Yeah, I mean, you have foreign investors that are coming into the bond market. They still think that, you know, there's safety in American debt. Now, just that statement alone,
I know,
should make people run to gold and say, I don't want that security. I don't want that safety net. American debt. Oh, yeah.
As opposed to European debt.
As opposed to European debt.
Right.
I would rather have monopoly money
than IOUs. Right? Wait a second. No, this is not your best choice. You know, it isn't either European debt or American debt. It's debt or assets. Promises to pay or payments. Which would you rather have? You should have the payments. You should say, wait, I would like a payment. Sorry, I don't need any more promises. Please give me a payment. What's a payment? Something tangible. Classic examples. Goldens are classic examples. Are gold and silver. Those are payments, not promises to pay. Payments.
And the consumer sentiment came out. I don't have the number in front of me. It was like 102 or something. I mean, it's the highest since 2007. So all you have to do is have the Dow up over 17,000, closing on 18,000, and people are sitting out there just fat and happy, thinking like, oh, wow, you know, we're this is great, isn't it? You know, the Dow is... doesn't matter that I can barely pay my bills or I'm getting the same wages that I had for the past 10, 15 years. But, hey, that stock market's higher, and I believe this economy is getting stronger. It's solid. It's solid growth, and I feel great about it. And people are going to sit there and keep their money in those paper markets, and you'll see the Dow drop to 11,000 and 10,000. Then maybe people will say, well, you know what? Maybe it's time to buy some gold. I'm a little concerned now. And gold prices.
It's kind of a radical choice,
and
though.
And gold prices will be, you know, 2,000 at that point in time. And instead of buying it here at these lower prices, instead of taking their profits from their paper, now, before it drops any lower, they'll wait until they lose half of it or a good, you know, a third of it. And then they'll decide, well, maybe I need to find something that's a little more secure. Maybe I need to find that safety, that safe haven. Maybe I ought to buy some gold and silver. And it's just, I scratch my head, I'm puzzled, but I guess it's just human nature, Al.
You know what else is human nature?
Break.
Start commercials at 20 minutes after the hour. We're going to do that now because it's human nature. Melody and I will be back in just a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is the American Independent. No, it's not. This is Financial Survival, American Independence program I do on Tuesday nights. But I'm still Alfred Adisk. I got that part right. Melody's here with me on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Did you have one of those senior moments, Ash?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it was senior
I had a cup
moment.
Of coffee, it kind of gets me going, you know, when I
Talking about...
I don't know what I'm going to say after I've had a cup of coffee. I just get kind of wild and... crazy after I've had my coffee, Molly.
Well, if the economy is doing so great, you kind of wonder why, and the stock market is up so high, you wonder how the state teacher pension system had a total of $499 billion in unfunded liabilities, which rose $100 billion in just 2 years. So it increased by $100 billion in just 2 years in unfunded liabilities. Teacher pension plans across the country are staggering from $500 billion in debt. And if you put that in perspective, that's more than $10,000 worth of debt for every student in the nation's primary and secondary schools.
Well, the solution is obvious, Melody. We're going to have to give them student loans in order to attend grade school and high school.
Maybe. The report card on teachers' pensions found that 70 cents of every dollar contributed to the state pension system pays for this massive debt rather than covering current employees' future retirement benefits.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just another sign that, you know, you have great stock markets and you think that the world is going on just fine and there aren't any problems, but these problems are certainly there. And the problems are certainly big when it comes to pension funds and having these pension retirement funds underfunded and in so much debt. So
You say it's a sign of a couple of things. I think it's a sign that teachers aren't as smart as they think they are. All right, how do these people get to be teachers if they can't even take care of their personal finances? It's also a sign that perhaps new math would finally evolved up through the program where the accountants that are running the teachers' pension funds have been taught new math by the teachers, and they're coming up with numbers that don't make sense and they can't keep track, but it's okay as long as they feel good about themselves, Melody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Got to have that self-esteem. That's what's important about mathematics. You don't have to get the right answer. All you have to do is feel good about it. That's part of new math, and perhaps it's finally reached, percolated upwards into the teachers' pension funds. And in a sense, you know, I'm joking, of course, being sarcastic, whatever. But it is interesting. You know, you would think that if there's one group of people around here who ought to be able to keep track of what's going on with their money, maybe it would be teachers. Nope, they can't do it. They're going to get beat out of their retirement, just like a lot of other government employees are going to lose whatever it was they were promised in their retirement. They were foolish enough, as were most of us. You know, it's not just point a finger at them, point a finger at you, point a finger at me. We've all accepted certain promises from government. And the most obvious promises are the ones that involve our retirement and so on, Social Security and government pensions and yada yada. The promises aren't going to be kept, not in full and substantially. They will be substantially repudiated. And anybody could see this coming who wanted to look. But as a people, we preferred to believe the promises. And we should have changed the national anthem to "Tell Me Lies, Tell Me Lies, Tell Me Sweet, Sweet Lies." Because that's how we've approached our government. We've asked to be lied to as a people. And they said, yes, we'll tell you happy lies. We'll tell you happy stories. Anybody could have seen. You know, we should have been able to understand from the beginning when they started to give us this fiat currency. People, intelligent people had to know. This was stupid. And the majority of people could have found out if they cared to look. It was stupid. It would inevitably, maybe not condemn them, but it would condemn their grandchildren to some sort of economic turmoil, some sort of economic collapse. And they went ahead with it anyway. Tell me lies, tell me lies, tell me sweet, sweet lies. Give me a promise. Come on, make me a promise. We live in a world where we are awash in promises. And there are too many promises to be kept. And that's what all those pieces of paper are. That's what the stocks are. That's what the bonds are. That's what the pension funds are. That's what the bank accounts are. They are paper promises to pay. And the vast majority of those promises cannot be kept because there's just too many out there. But people will still say, President Obama, will you please tell us a lie? And he says, why, sure. Come on in and listen to my State of the Union speech. I'll tell you how everything is really improving. Well, if you want to believe those promises, if you want to rely on promises rather than payments, just keep on listening to your politicians. Keep storing your wealth in a form of paper and see what happens. On the other hand, if you want to be paid rather than get a promise to pay, get yourself some gold. Get yourself some silver. Protect yourself. Be paid. It's not a radical idea. It's just common sense once you get hold of it, once you grasp in your mind that the paper is just a promise to pay and the gold is a payment. Would I rather be paid for my work or would I rather have a promise to pay for my work? Which would I rather have? This is so hard for me. Help me, Melody. Tell me what to do. President Obama promised me that the promises, you know, are going to be, that the other promises are going to all be good.
Well, if this economy is so much better and we're on solid growth, one out of every five children in the U.S. relies on food stamps for some meals. And this is new data that was released today by the U.S. Census Bureau. Though the economy supposedly is recovering, this number is still higher than it was before the start of the recession in 2007.
Yep.
In 2014, 16 million children received food stamps. This data and more is in the U.S. Census Bureau's annual release of data on families and their living arrangements, and that all came out today. There's another trend in the data. The number of children and families with married parents who received food stamps has doubled since the recession began. And so, again, it's...
I've seen a report in just the last couple of days that claims that half the children in public schools are living in poverty right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, what is Obama talking about? What is the government talking about? You know, there's a point in time, as long as they're telling us, oh, the recovery, yeah, things are getting better, the economy's getting stronger. They're not addressing problems. They are spinning lies. They're telling us lies, telling us lies, telling us sweet, sweet lies. That's what they're doing. And somewhere along the line, everyone has to look at this and say, enough. I don't want any more lies. I don't care how bad the truth is. Tell me, what is it? I can handle the truth. I can handle the truth. And I need to handle it. I need to know what the truth is so I can order my life in a way that makes some sense and order it in a way where I increase the probability that I will survive with the minimum amount of adversity. Huh? I need to know that truth.
Well, there's few people, Al, that remember that old movie with Jack Nicholson? You can't handle the truth. A lot of people can handle the truth. They can't even ask questions about why none of this makes sense. You know, why you can have stock markets at high and you know, all these new jobs being created and we're all supposed to be, you know, much better than, off better than we were back in 2007, but yet there's more children on food stamps and in poverty in this country than ever before. So it's like people don't want to know the truth.
Well, I don't care whether they want to know the truth or they don't want to know the truth.
The truth should be provided.
I don't care whether they can handle the truth or they can't handle the truth. I don't care. All right? We can't run this economy on the basis of, oh, my gosh, let's not tell the truth because some of the people out there are too stupid and ignorant to handle the truth. Let's pretend everything is running fine. I don't care if they can't handle the truth. Somebody needs to say what the truth is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the reason they don't is because people don't want the truth. If people demanded the truth, at least they'd have to give some truth. You know, to which they could do. But when people turn a blind eye and they don't care whether they hear the truth or not, they're not going to get the truth. It's just like if someone allows someone to lie to you, guess what? They're going to continue to lie to you. So, I mean, I agree. We should have the truth. These are politicians that are elected to make sure that the country gets the truth.
No, they're elected for the purpose of being reelected and then elected again and elected again. That's their purpose.
That's their purpose.
It's not to tell anybody the truth. It's, again, public wants to hear lies. We'll give them lies.
Supposed to tell.
Somebody's got to tell the truth.
Here's the truth. The United States does not rank among the top 10 countries in the world for economic freedom.
Yeah.
That's according to the Heritage Foundation 2015 Index of Economic Freedom. The U.S. was ranked only 12th after Hong Kong, Singapore, New Zealand, Australia, Switzerland, Canada, Chile, Estonia, Ireland, Mauritius, and Denmark. Estonia was formerly a part of the Soviet Union. We at one time were number 6, and we have dropped to 12. And the index rates economic freedom for countries on 10 quantitative factors that are based on 4 pillars of freedom: rule of law, limited government, regulatory efficiency, and open markets. Each of the 10 economic freedoms with these categories is graded on a scale of 0 to 100. A country's overall score is derived by averaging these 10 economic freedoms, with equal weight being given to each. And again, the U.S. economic freedom score 76.2, making its economy the 12th freest.
Did they mention what the top country was and what their score was?
Not.
They mentioned 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but I don't know if they gave you their top score.
I don't see one.
All right. Well, it'd be interesting to see what that is. But this is the sort of information that should have congressmen, senators, and even presidents screaming. We are no longer the land of the free. That's what it comes down to. Somebody should be screaming about that. And it shouldn't just be people that are doing radio broadcasts. It should be someone in Congress, someone in the Senate, someone in the president's in the White House. Somebody is getting ready to run for presidency in 2016, and that election process is already in force. Got 2 years to go, and we already have, that election's already been, the primary is already taking place as the competitors begin to jostle to see who's going to be the number one guy for the Republicans and Democrats. I mean, that's all by itself. That's another story. But that somebody should be offended that we are falling in terms of our measure of freedom, at least one measure of freedom. And we're falling in a lot of regards. Everybody knows that. I doubt that there's anyone listening to this program that doesn't understand that our rights are being diminished. And we may have varying opinions of whether they're being diminished a lot or they're being diminished a little, but nobody listening to this program says, oh, this is great. We have more rights than we had when I was a kid. Bunk. Nobody can make that claim who's got an IQ over 90. All right? We do not have more rights. We have less. And there's nothing to suggest that it isn't going to be more or it isn't going to be less, even less rights into the future. So, I don't know. Does anybody mind? Does anybody? No. Tell me lies. Tell me lies. Tell me sweet, sweet lies. Here we are living in the land of the free. Yeah. Are we? We're living in the land of the world's biggest police state. That's where you are, ladies and gentlemen. And a lot of people, oh, no, we're not. Yeah, you are. We jail a higher percentage of people in this country than any other nation on the face of the earth. We jail a higher percentage of people in this country than the former Soviet Union, than the Red China in its heyday. We jail more people in this country. This is the least free by measure of the size of our prison population, and that's a classic and undeniable indicator of whether we are or are not in a police state. What are we jailing people for? Murder? Rape? Robbery? Or things like drug crimes? Right? And failure to pay income tax. I don't know that not so many people are being jailed for failure to pay income tax. But we have a bunch of offenses where nobody's been hurt. It's like not wearing a seatbelt. I'm not saying you get jailed for not wearing a seatbelt, but you get ticketed. How big a problem is that? Should we be ticketed for that? Are we living in a free country when you can't even decide for yourself whether I am or I'm not going to put on? Is it better to have a seatbelt? Yes, I get that. Should it be mandatory? Should you have to worry? Oh, my gosh, I better fasten a seatbelt. The cops might catch me for not wearing a seatbelt. Is that evidence of a free country? The anxiety you feel every time you slide into your car and you fasten that seatbelt for fear that if you don't, you're going to get a ticket? Is that part of land of the free? We are being submerged in lies and illusions and delusions and fantasies and refusals to see the truth. And sooner or later, that truth is going to be apparent to all. And as you said before, Melody, a lot of people don't want to see the truth. Well, you're going to have to look at it.
Not so long from now.
And when you do, you're going to wish to God you were looking at it through gold-colored glasses. Not rose-colored glasses, gold-colored glasses, and then you might have a shot.
And what's interesting about this economic report, this economic freedom, when Obama took office in 2009, we were ranked 6th. So in the years in his office, we went from 6th down to 12th place.
Yes, we can, Melody. That's what when it comes to making a police state, yes, we can.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's take a break for some more commercials, because yes, we can have some more commercials on financial survival. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, and we'll be right back.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thethreews.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. Alfred Addisk and Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Got a question come in from Ivan. According to Debka File in Tehran, 2 high Iranian officials Tuesday warned Israel to await retaliation. This is for the killing of Iran's general and 4 Hezbollah officers. Department Foreign Minister Hossein Aramadol Ahayan.
Good guess.
I know. Word said, we told the Americans that the leaders of the Zionist regime should await the consequences of their act. Adding, Israel crossed our red lines. Evidently, this is the first time that Iran indicated to Israel a red line. Is this a causes belli?
In other words, is it cause for war? No, it's not cause for war. It's just Hatfields and McCoys. If you kill 2 of the Hatfields, they will kill 2 of the McCoys. And then the McCoys will say, we're justified in killing 2 more Hatfields. And the Hatfields will say, we're justified in killing 2 more McCoys. You've crossed the red line. You've killed a couple of the McCoys. Now you Hatfields are going to have to pay. You know, it's childish on one level. It's people are dying, and that's not childish, but it becomes a pretext. You killed some of ours, we killed some of yours. What do you say? You know, it's part of human nature, it's part of human stupidity.
And prior to the break, we were talking about our economic freedom. And you mentioned seatbelts. Mm-hmm. And Murray wrote in, he says, when you get a ticket for a seatbelt, who is the victim? This highlights
exactly
how our common law has been replaced by equity or admiralty law.
Admiralty.
Whatever.
Yeah, admiralty or administrative procedure. There's a bunch of things, but you don't go into a court of law. You have no victim. How many victimless crimes do we have in this country? Those are crimes against the state, ultimately. Nobody got hurt. What's the big deal? Leave it alone. You know, we see stories in the newspapers periodically about someone who gets stopped for a traffic violation, and they wind up, before it's done, somebody gets shot. Does that make any sense? I mean, I saw one just recently where some cop pulled some car over, had 6 people in it, probably youngsters, you know, in their 20s, who knows. And one of them in the back seat was constantly fiddling with his belt. And the cop couldn't see what was going on, and he said, stop playing with your belt. And the kid just kept on doing it, and the cop shot him and killed him. Right? What was the kid doing? He apparently had some drugs on him. The cop thought he was going for a gun. Didn't have a gun. And what was this all over? I don't know. Somebody made a rolling stop at a stop sign. That's what it was. The driver made a rolling stop at the stop sign. Somewhere along the line, you see these things where if you don't do what the cop tells you, he will kill you. Somebody's got to be able to intrude a little bit of common sense and say, look, all we got going here is a traffic offense. No one has been hurt. There is no point to pushing this to where somebody gets shot. In the police state, of course, that's crazy talk. Of course, there's reason to push this. If you're not willing to essentially kiss the cop's butt, then you get shot. And the cop, he was hurt by it. He was apparently crying later on. He didn't want to shoot an unarmed kid, but he did. Because he's living in a state of paranoia. The whole world is cracking up. The only oasis of sanity that I'm aware of is Jim from West Virginia. Unfortunately, he happens to be on the phone right now. And Jim, I want you to give us evidence of sanity and stability. What you got for us?
Well, I have some very important and simple information to give people about economics. Okay, there are a number of myths in economics. One of which is deflation creates depressions. That's just one cause. Another one is war is good for the economy. That's a big fat lie, but it can be manipulated. Okay, a depression is anything that impedes production of goods and or services and or impedes trade. Anything that takes resources away from what people want and need. Now, you can have an inflationary or deflationary depression. The Great Depression was created because they created huge cutoff of currency, which impeded trade, so that kicked us into a horrendous depression. So, yes, deflation created that one, massive currency cutoff. The Federal Reserve, after World War I, cut a bunch of currency loose, more paper currency than they had gold, and then they cut off the currency to create the Great Depression so they could buy up industries that could take them into World War II. But war is good for the economy. No. Okay, here's the situation. Massive deflation can create a depression. Look at the Great Depression. Massive inflation can cause a depression. Look at the Walmart. Look at Zimbabwe. Crop failure can create depressions. Trade sanctions, embargoes, blockades, which I consider to be acts of war, create horrendous depressions. Look at Iraq. Oh, my God, decades of horrid depression. People starving to death because of trade sanctions and embargoes. Wars, the same deal. It takes everything from everybody to fight the stinking war. And the number one cause of depression is government. We have had 40 years, and if you correct the numbers for inflation and taxes, you will understand that we've had a constant, more or less, decrease in the output of production of goods and services. Real wealth, which I use the phrase food, fuel, fiber for clothes, building materials and tools, finished goods and services. So, you know, they say war is good for the economy. Yeah, after World War II, we bombed everybody else back to the horse and buggy days if the horse didn't get eaten for food. So we were a sole supplier of goods for the world for quite a while. So, yeah, a couple of anomalies. It made it look like war is good for the economy. We've heard it said time and time again, war is good for the economy. Hey, we've been at war 15 years. How's that working out for you?
Yeah, no.
Now, if people can separate...
War is insane. What it comes down to is war is insane. You take resources and you blow them up. All right? That's what it comes down to. And it's not just their resources. We're blowing up their cities. We're blowing up our bombs. We're blowing up our airplanes. We're blowing up the people that fight in the war. We're expending the cost of logistics and supplying food to whoever it is fighting over there and the rest of that. It costs money to fight war. And where is the payoff? Some industrial corporations that manufacture war supplies, yeah, they do well. But the rest of us, what happens?
Let me explain something. I think I've said this before on this program. Can't remember. It costs about $300,000 per corpse for Vietnam War. Yeah. $1 trillion, $3 million
per corpse. Whose corpse? Our American corpse? Wait a second. Let me make sure I understand this. Are we in the Vietnam War? You say it costs $300,000 per corpse per dead body. Are we talking about Vietnamese dead bodies, North Vietnamese dead bodies, U.S. dead bodies, or all of them together? Or do you know?
Vietnamese.
Okay. Vietnamese. For every Viet Cong we killed, it costs $300,000.
Okay, let me talk. Vietnamese, 3 million dead Vietnamese, $1 trillion. That meant that we were stuck with a bill of 300-some thousand per dead corpse. Corrected for inflation, that's $3 million a corpse. Iraq, $5 trillion over the Middle East, 1.5 million dead Iraqis. That's $3 million a corpse. Now, this explains why we have veterans living under bridges.
We could have bribed them all $10,000 apiece. It's just like bribing congressmen. It's a lot cheaper to bribe them than it is to shoot them.
The bottom line is, people, get your thinking straight on all this stuff. Don't listen to the myths. We have to cut the bleeding out of this whole country. The number one bleeders, you got it, the banksters and our government. But understand, the number one cause of poverty is too much government. And
Absolutely. Swiddling
the inflation, deflation thing won't do a dang thing compared to getting rid of the tax overhead.
If Why is government the number
today,
one cause of poverty?
Say again.
Why is government?
Because classically, throughout history, the lawful purpose of government is to protect our rights, our lives, our property, our children. But the truth of the matter is, government gets itself in place, and their number one job is to extract as much as they can from the governed, and they do that so they can stay in control. Now, that's the nature.
Yeah, I understand. But the other point is this, they produce nothing. I mean, if government was a good thing, why don't we all just work for the government? All right, we could all have pensions that are double or better than what we get in Social Security. We could be paid double what people in the private sector do. Why don't we just all work for the government? Why? Because there wouldn't be anything to eat. Government doesn't grow any food, doesn't build any houses, doesn't build any cars. It produces nothing. And the bigger it grows, the less people we have who are producing something. And those are the only people who can really be taxed. You can only put tax on production.
Here's one for you. If at first you don't succeed, a government job is what you need. You dot the I's, you cross the T's, and then you say, "Your money, please."
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's one of the genius of the American Constitution. Is that it is essentially an anti-government document. And most people would sit back and say, oh, that's not true. Yeah, it is. That's why we have separation of powers. That's why we have checks and balances. That's why we have a guarantee of free speech. So if we see the crooks in government doing something wrong, we can stand up and say something about it. Freedom of the press, the right to keep and bear arms. All of it is intended to protect us from government, which is inevitably greedy for power. It was intended to give us a limited government, and what do we have right now? An almost unlimited government. And we wonder why we have
problems. Let me give you another one.
One more, Jim, and then we got to go.
Okay. There's a fellow who's a 30-year veteran of the intelligence communities, very familiar with all the contractors and all the different agencies. He said in the last 20 years we've probably spent $2 trillion tracking and tracing people. Take $2 trillion, divided by 300 million people. How many dollars have they stuck us with just to track and trace us to get rid of dissidents? Catch you later. I hope I made my points.
Yep. Hi, Jim. Thank you. Jim from West Virginia. We'll talk to Jim again, I'm sure, in the foreseeable future. What do you think, Melody? Is the world becoming more free, less free, more of a police state, less of a police state, the world in general, the United States?
Well, you're asking me that right as we're ending the program. So, I mean, that question alone should be the whole program.
We have 3 minutes.
The world is insane.
Got enough time to stick your head in the noose and...
Yeah, I'm good at that. But, it was all mentioned prior to you asking me the question. I mean, what more do you want me to add to that, Al?
Well,
we're in a position and you can trace it back and we know the agenda. We know where this is headed and we know where this is going to end. And, I do believe you take away politics. It is a spiritual battle. It is good versus evil. That's what it's all about. We can name it politics. We can name it whatever. But it really is a spiritual battle. And, it's...
Who is the greatest enemy of the people of the United States of America? Communists, Russia, China, Uganda, what?
People.
It's the government of the United States. That's what it is. And it's always been that way, and it's not a radical statement. Our founders understood it. The principal enemy of the people of France is the government of France. Principal enemy of the people of England, government of England. Who puts us in jail? They talk about we're fighting for our freedoms over in Iraq. What freedoms of mine did the Iraqis ever threaten? I never threatened any of my freedoms. The only people who threaten my freedoms are the people in Washington, D.C. If our military actually wanted to fight for our freedoms, the first place they'd start is over there on the East Coast at Washington, D.C. And it's not radical talk. People say, that's crazy talk. No, it's not. This is fundamental truth. Who was the principal enemy of the people of Germany? It was the Nazi government. When Hitler was there, it was Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party. Destroyed the country, caused it to be busted in half into two chunks for 50 years. Who's the principal enemy of the people of the Soviet Union? It was the government of the Soviet Union. They're the ones that tore that country apart and left it in poverty. It wasn't the United States. It wasn't external forces per se. We played a role in it. I understand that. But the principal enemy of every people on the face of the earth is their own government. And the reason that happens is because people are naturally susceptible to believing the promises. The irrational and impossible to fulfill promises that governments produce. Vote for me and I'll see that you get a free and I'll see that you get more welfare. And people go for it. And next thing you know, we wind up in a bind. We are out of time, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank all of you for listening to Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.